podcast for John Jones, the Manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront.
Hello, I'm Frank, and this is 60 Years of Martian Manhunter, 1956. We'll begin with the January cover dated Detective Comics number 227 and a story titled The Man with 20 Lives by Joe Samichson and Joe Serta. It begins with John Jones in his Martian form, standing on a hilltop outside of town, looking up to the sky and monologuing.
I cannot return, but I am waiting here. My people of Mars, waiting until our project, Star Ride, will transport you to Earth also. Professor Mark Ardell of this planet meant no harm when his dimension machine swept me through the cosmos and trapped me on this island Earth. Had he not died suddenly, he would have sent me back to my native Mars. But none other knows the operation of this great robot machine. So all I can do now is wait peacefully and take on the guise of my Earthling role.
Memories of my home planet must not dull my senses. I must continue to help make crime obsolete here on Earth, as we on Mars did during the Great Evolution.
Back at the office of the Chief of Detectives, Lieutenant Saunders was questioning the killer Monty Fisk, but couldn't crack the alibi of the hired murderer. Detective John Jones had more success by using a new Martian power. He could retrace thought processes to create a thought picture. Basically, it was a telepathic memory probe. He determined that Monty Fisk was guilty, but he didn't have the evidence to prove it in court, so he began harassing Fisk with his knowledge, and that prompts Fisk to sic his men on Detective Jones, repeatedly attempting to kill him. Fisk believes he's finally succeeded, but then John Jones visits him in a spectral form that's created through his Martian powers, and that drives Fisk to confess his crimes to Lieutenant Saunders. This was the last John Jones story written by Joe Samichson, and I feel it's the best. It gives you the entire formula as established by Samichson, gives you the origin, motivations, makes reference again to the Great Evolution that shows that Mars had progressed past Earth society, something that would be lost with future writers. This is also the second time that Samichson refers to his Martian as John Johns, with the last name spelled J-O-N-Z. This would continue into his fourth appearance and then be corrected to the more familiar 2N Jones seen since. This was also the first story to refer to the character as Martian Manhunter. Previously, he was the Manhunter from Mars and other subtitles like Sleuth from Outer Space. This was another definitive appearance for the character Lieutenant Saunders, who appears to have been intended to be the Jim Gordon of the John Jones stories. And this is also the first Martian Manhunter story in which the character is shown to have the power of flight. It was inferred that he had some form of levitation with his Earthwalk and the origin story, but here we actually see him turn into an alien and fly after he's been dropped off a bridge. The Man with 20 Lives has been reprinted at least three times, most notably in 1982's Digest The Best of DC number 30. Moving on to Detective Comics number 228, it was a challenge which John Jones, master earthbound detective, had never met before. Known as John, J-O-N, Jones, J-O-N-Z, on his native planet, Mars, he possessed 100 skills that Earthlings could not cope with. But against master thief Alex Dunster, he was just another victim of the man who planned an escape to the stars. Police Captain Harding made his debut in this story, and he was hopping mad over a series of technological thefts performed by Alex Dunster. Despite his Martian powers and the relative ease with which he captured most crooks, even John Jones was stymied against this master criminal. Jones was unable to sneak up on Alex Dunster because of a super listening device and was nearly killed by an electronic ray. Eventually, Jones traced Dunster back to his hideout, where it was revealed that he'd stolen the teleportation device of Professor Urdle, spelled U-R-D-L-E. And when Jones sees it, he realizes what it is because it looks exactly like the device Professor Urdle had used to bring him to Earth. However, since they show a flashback to the robot brain, it's obvious that the small spherical device that Alex Dunster has in no way resembles the bulky rectangular device that Professor Urdle had used. Anyway, Dunster's plan was to use the device to create a hideout in space, and he created a dilemma for John Jones because now that Dunster had figured out how to use the device to teleport someone away from the Earth, Jones could potentially return to Mars. But he couldn't in good conscience leave Earth at the mercy of Dunster. The two clash and the device is destroyed. I think that editor Jack Schiff must have thrown a verbal summation of the series to his new writer based on the phonetic misspellings, which included the repeat of Joe Samichson's John Jones rendered with one N in the last name. And I think that Joe Serta was trying to help smooth out the rough patches, because in one scene, when Captain Harding is demanding the capture of Alex Dunster of a group of his detectives, one toward the back looks like Lieutenant Saunders, who's never explicitly referenced in the story. John Jones didn't pick up any new powers this time, but there was some fine tuning and some more clear explanation. He has super sensitive hearing. He can see through solids as a definite, where it was only implied in a previous story. There's a second mention of his having comparative invulnerability, and he also has supervision / Martian eyesight. Alex Dunster was the first supervillain that John Jones had fought, someone who was able to create scientific devices that would counter his Martian powers and really gave him a run for his money. Unfortunately, the character never appeared again. Escape to the Stars was written by Dave Wood, who had runs on Black Hawk, Tomahawk, Green Arrow, Batman, contributed to many of DC's war and sci-fi anthologies, and was the co-creator of Animal Man, Dial H for Hero, Ultra the Multi-Alien, the Batman Villains The Terrible Trio, and the newspaper strip Sky Masters, where he worked with Jack Kirby. Arguably, he was also a co-creator on Challengers of the Unknown, a strip that he wrote for quite a while, but some people assert that Joe Simon was the co-creator, or that Kirby had done it all on his own. Dave Wood is officially credited with writing 6 Martian Manhunter tales, but Wood was also a ghostwriter, so it's possible he did more, and in fan circles, he's credited with writing a great many more Manhunter for Mars tales. Escape to the Stars has been reprinted at least 3 times, most notably in both the 1990 and 1992 editions of the greatest 1950 stories ever told. Detective Comics number 229 offered the first script by longtime Manhunter from Mars scribe Jack Miller. Entitled The Phantom Bodyguard, it's a true mystery where millionaire Drexel Mansfield has multiple attempts made on his life, so Detective John Jones is assigned to bodyguard him and determine who the true culprit is. It's a solid story that follows the formula set up by Joe Samuelson and restores to our hero his full, accurately spelled name of John Jones. It also introduces one new power, lung power 1,000 times that of humans, basically super breath. The new permanent creative team of Jack Miller and Joe Serta continue their run into Detective Comics number 230. Time and time again, the sleuth from outer space has successfully brought his superpowers into play against crimedom, but it appeared John Jones had met his match when he went after the Pharaoh gang, for his Martian powers were useless when he became the sleuth without a clue. After an extended sequence reviewing John Jones's origin and powers, we pick up with the DA threatening to fire the chief if the Pharaoh gang isn't found within 24 hours. John Jones, the chief's best detective, vows to break this case, even though with his full complement of powers, he's yet to do so. To really put the pressure on, John Jones realizes, of course, it's the year of the Blazer Comet, which travels between Earth and Mars once every century for a full 24 hours. It's blocking off the rays that emanate from Mars, the rays responsible for my superpowers. Now I'm like any other Earthling, and I'll remain so until the comet passes. But by then, I'll be too late to save the chief. I must continue my investigation with the simple powers of a human. John Jones is successful at apprehending the gang with pure brain power, though he does get shot and realize what a blunder he's made in not carrying a gun, since he tends to rely so much on his superpowers. Speaking of powers, reference is made to John Jones's translucent form, and that word doesn't mean what Jack Miller thinks it means. He's actually becoming immaterial and letting bullets pass through him. Well, except for that one. Detective Comics number 231 advertised, "It was the most incredible case John Jones, the sleuth from outer space, had ever worked on, for a cunning criminal was employing what appeared to be super tricks to match, indeed to equal, the amazing Martian's abilities. Thus did the Manhunter from Mars wage a war of wits with
the thief who had superpowers.
My Martian eyesight has spotted the magician thief. He's making off with an armored car, but how do his tricks work?"
The story once again recounts the origin of the Martian Manhunter and his early appearances, touches on his powers. Surely that's unrelated to a new criminal who's on a crime spree where he demonstrates powers remarkably similar to the Martian Manhunter's. So of course the only explanation is that this criminal is an earthly magician, a master in the art of deception. That would explain his incredible actions. John Jones continues in his investigation, offering one ridiculous theory after another, clearly in denial of the fact that the person he's pursuing is a freaking Martian. That actually works when you look at Joe Samuelson's The Great Evolution, which posited that Martian society was peaceful and had eradicated crime and war. But Manhunter immediately regards this magician thief as a Martian criminal, so he's clearly familiar with criminals, and the fellow had escaped through the use of a defective guard belt, where essentially crooks were left floating above the planet Mars during their incarceration. As with Escape to the Stars, John Jones briefly considers fixing the guard belt and using it to whisk himself back to Mars, but realizes that he'd then be leaving Earth under the power of his Martian countrymen, and so forced the guard belt back onto him and shot him back to Mars. This is an interesting story in that it makes clear that there is crime on Mars, that there are criminals on Mars, that there is a prison system on that planet. The flashback sequence offers an alternate costume for John Jones, which features a brown cape and boots, and then pink-red suspenders and pink trunks with blue leggings. It's different. It's also odd in that it matches the prison garb worn by the Martian countryman, who's in a pink outfit with long sleeves and short shorts. He also had blue leggings and brown boots. The Martian criminal was, of course, the first superpowered foe Martian Manhunter ever fought. And in the story, John Jones reveals three new powers: super strength, teleportation, where he's able to think about a location in the city and transport himself there through sheer willpower, and also atom vision, which heats up molecules, is essentially heat vision. Detective Comics number 232 brought us The Dog with a Martian Master. John Jones is pursuing the criminal Andy Fletcher when a crowd alerts him to a hound dog that's drowning in freezing waters under the city bridge. Jones uses his powers to collect the dog, but loses his prey. As Jones tries to pick the case back up again, he's followed by the dog, who repeatedly clues criminals to his presence. The dog displays amazing abilities of escape from the various confinements that John Jones attempts to apply against him, and can even scent John Jones when he's in his invisible mode. John Jones finally catches Andy Fletcher, but accidentally starts a fire at the old Bijou Theater. It's up to the hound dog to drag John Jones to safety, as he's left powerless by the flames. In the end, Jones names him Jupiter, and says, "We're going to be real pals for a long time." Jupiter never appeared again. This story offered a variation on Martian Manhunter's power of levitation, which he refers to as nullifying Earth's gravitational field. Detective Comics number 233's The Ghost from Outer Space featured John Jones in the role of a murdered mob boss who haunts the gang that killed him for his share of the loot. Even though this was quite possibly the most superstitious gang in comic book history, Jones still had to play 4 pages worth of poltergeist to get these guys to confess their crimes, including breaking out of a ghost trap that involved a kerosene lamp. In case you missed it, the plot was almost identical to The Man with 20 Lives. The Martian Convict ran in August 1956, Detective Comics number 234. In it, Warden Powers learns of a planned prison break from the state penitentiary, so an unidentified superior officer who greatly resembles Lieutenant Saunders orders John Jones to put on a latex disguise so the warden can smuggle him into prison to investigate the breakout plan. Eventually, John Jones' ruse is discovered, and the convicts begin attempting to murder him. He survives only through the use of his Martian powers, and then finally turns the tables on the breakout plot's leader. For 6 pages, it was solid enough. The World's Greatest Magician from Detective Comics number 235 marked the 4th straight story in which no depiction of a Martian is shown in the actual comic stories. That means there's no Martians besides John Jones, there's no origin flashbacks, and Detective John Jones, the human form of our hero, is the only visualization of that character. Mr. Darrow, a representative from a traveling circus, visited the Middletown Police Department to see about getting help with a series of elaborate thefts that had gone on in his fantastic workplace. No one, not even private investigators, could determine who was responsible, only that it was clearly an inside job. John Jones volunteers to go undercover in the circus as a magician under the name Jones the Great. Of course, this would require an elaborate disguise.
"By mere concentration, my powers enable me to grow a goatee in an instant."
With a second newly introduced Martian power, Jones the Great levitates a pachyderm before a rapturous audience.
"My thought waves are bombarding the animal's body molecules. He'll be weightless in a moment."
Once again, John Jones says that he goes translucent, when he means transparent, during one of those old sword-through-the-box tricks. He walks a tightrope made from common household thread. The most elaborate trick, though, and the one that introduces the third new Martian power, is the ability to duplicate any object. He does this by having a little boy put an ice cream cone in a box. Then,
"In order to materialize a duplicate object, I must assemble component parts from the very atoms in the air. First, my X-ray vision, I'll see what's inside that box. It's forming. I'm recreating the particles. Need more atom combinations for the boy's ice cream cone."
And sure enough, he creates an ice cream cone. Kid, don't eat that. It was literally made from the sweat off his brow, the spit in his eye, and the gravel in his gut. Jones the Great keeps replicating this duplication trick until the thief in the audience gets a little too thrilled with the prospect of doubling his loot. Jones catches on and nabs Jojo the Clown. Detective Comics number 236's The Great Earth-Mars Mystery gave us our first look at the Red Planet within the context of the Manhunt for Mars strip. In the story, John Jones has this giant view screen that he'd been using to try to communicate with his home planet for months. Recent solar explosions enhanced their power to such a degree that he was able to finally make contact with his parents. This story helps to establish that in the Silver Age, John Jones was a young man. He's not trying to reach his friends, his girlfriend, his wife. He's reaching out to his parents. That's the sort of thing you would expect a young man to do. Dad Jones looks like the Manhunter of these early stories with the weird matte graining overbite. The only difference is that his colors are reversed from the classic John Jones costume. Meanwhile, Mother Jones wears a red robe with white pointy shoulder pad thingies and this white piece where her hair ought to be and great big earrings. John Jones explains,
"I'm now a detective on the planet Earth. A brilliant Earthling scientist developed a machine that transported me here. I miss you, but I'm happy."
He explains that it may take years before he can go back to Mars. Meanwhile,
"I devote my time to fighting Earth criminals with my superpowers."
As it happens, Dad Jones mentions that there's a case in which canal raiders in this very well hydrated version of Mars have been terrorizing the mother city, stealing priceless relics from Martian memorial halls and then disappearing into local waterways. As it happens, John Jones, the police detective, had been trying to break a similar case. The parallels between the Martian case and the Earth case allow Jones to tell his father how to solve the crime on this Red Planet while John Jones solves it here on Earth. It's not the strongest story, but it is interesting to see these Martian criminals, especially because it puts the lie to the premise put forth in the origin story that Mars was this planet of peace that was absent any crime. These raiders running around with laser pistols blasting their way into Martian memorials like the Chamber of Hope and stealing stuff shows that Mars wasn't that much more evolved than Earth after all. The story also features an appearance by a commanding officer referred to only as Chief. It's not clear whether this is supposed to be Lieutenant Saunders or Captain Harding, but based on the build and the amount of hair on the fellow's head, though he wears a hat, I'm going to assume that it's Captain Harding appearance. In case you're wondering, this would not be the last appearance of the Jones family. In Detective Comics number 237, just 3 months after the last time, John Jones finds himself back in jail, specifically in the story The Sleuth Who Went to Jail. This time, though, in a sweetly naive conceit, gangsters have built their own prison to hold other criminals who've backstabbed and otherwise double-crossed them. And when John Jones tumbles onto a robbery, he gets captured and placed into this underworld slammer. Instead of repeatedly trying to kill him, the mobsters keep giving him tasks to perform, and he uses his superpowers to do so, shocking them with his success rate. He stays in prison, waiting to attract enough attention for the warden to bring in his boss so he can capture the whole group. The old Martian mind over matter trick pops up again when he has clothes wash other clothes in the laundry. He also demonstrates a new power involving powerful alien currents which allow him to shatter boulders with bolts of energy. They're not specifically from his eyes, but they do seem to emanate from his head. Detective Comics number 238 was the last issue cover dated 1956 and featured the story Earth Detective for a Day, which was one of the better efforts from Jack Miller's first year. This is primarily due to the villain of the piece, Booby Trap Bagley. The local police department was in hot pursuit of this fellow who'd been eluding them by setting up deadly traps, many of which are demonstrated throughout the story, which keeps it very action-packed. Also, the guy's just generally formidable as he counters the police's efforts to apprehend him. John Jones himself pursues Bagley into a circus/amusement park, but it just so happens that during this pursuit, the Mars-Earth comet passes between the two planets. While the manner of Martian Manhunter's powers aren't very clearly explained, and there are contradicting explanations for his powers, one thing that does pop up often is that somehow Jones gains his powers from the planet Mars, like rays from the planet, something like that. And so these comets keep coming by. One came up, you know, earlier in this episode that deprive Martian Manhunter of his powers. In this case, it's because rays from the comet penetrate a high ore content on Earth and cancel out his powers. So here's Jones in a particularly precarious situation, one that is unenviable for any of the police officers that he works with. Without powers, he's trying to pursue Bagley, and it very much amplifies the threat level of this character. Also, it shows that even without his powers, John Jones is an exceptional manhunter. I believe this was also the last story to feature Lieutenant Saunders. Curiously, in this one story, he seems to have morphed into former U.S. President Lyndon Johnson, so maybe that's that explanation for what happened to that guy once he stopped appearing in the strips.
Your ego betrays you. Will you not listen to reason? This won't end well for you.
We received retweets from Professor Alan Middleton, Ange, Between the Pages, Bob, Charlton Hero, Chris Michael, Count Druncula, David Fior, DSNRS, Ed Moore at both Indie Comics Fan and Teal Productions, Inigo Montoya, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, Firestorm Fan, Floto Span, Illegal Machine, Luke Dobb, Martin Gray, Odyssey Unleashed, Randy Caldwell, Randy Micah Smith, and the Top 5 Road Crew, as well as favorites from Bob, Charlton Hero, Chris Michael, Cindy Womack, Count Druncula, David Golding Artist, Dear Man Company, DSNRS, Eel Perrin, Ed Moore, Inigo Montoya, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, Jamie Carr, Longbox Graveyard, Luke Dobb, Oscar Olalde, Randy Caldwell, Randy Micah Smith, Sean Corey, and the Top 5 Road Crew. Randy Caldwell tweeted, "Thanks for the telepathic thanking. Hashtag FF, not a Reed Richards reference. I loathe him too much. Hashtag Viva Doom." Oscar Olalde tweeted, "Glad to have your podcast for my daily outdoor cardio. Must look kind of stupid to the people driving by, with a chuckling and replying to the nothingness while listening. Hashtag worth it." Luke Dobb tweeted, "I'm really enjoying the Martian Manhunter podcast. Check it out." And Eternal Rage tweeted, "The Idlehead podcast is quickly becoming one of my favorites to listen to. I don't comment often because I know so little." Podcast listeners should feel free to leave a comment on one of our blogs, either the Umbrella Rolled Spine Podcasts or the specific Idlehead of Diablo blog. Both are available quite easily through Google searches. You can also shoot me a tweet at Commander Blanks. That's BLANX. Thank you for listening.